ladies and gentlemen.
This is the Public Square.
All right, and the Public Square continues, and we focus in today's episode on Public Square. We talk about the big, important discussions around development, the politics, and we are looking at the power sector, and this is in partnership with the Wole Soyinka Center for Journalism. And in the first of a special three-part series on the power sector, we're going to be looking at first this week, the power sector budget, the power sector generation and transmission will happen next week, and the week after next, we'll be looking at distribution and the retail sector. Today's panel features Motunrayo Alaka, who is the Executive Director, Chief Executive Officer of Wole Soyinka Center for Journalism. And we also have Vayala Kwaga, Senior Research and Policy Analyst with Budget. And then we're supposed to have from the presidency, unfortunately, Ahmed Zakari, who is a Special Advisor to the President on Infrastructure and Power Sector, unfortunately could not join in. A last-minute commitment, and he had to be excused, but he will join us in subsequent episodes of this discussion around power. Remember, you can always join the conversation on social media at Nigeria Info FM, at Public Square NG, and on WhatsApp 08095975805. If you've got questions, comments, would love to hear from you always. After the panel is done, Rotimi Sankore, who's the co-host of this show, will join in with Big Picture Analysis. And of course, we want to hear from you, the audience, always when we are done. At some point, we'll open the phone lines also to have your feedback in this. Remember, our handles again are on social media at Rotimi Sankore, at Public Square NG, at Nigeria Info FM. We're going to begin with Motunrayo Alaka of the Wole Soyinka Center for Journalism Center. And great to have you join us, Motunrayo.
Good evening. Great to be here.
Brilliant. And it's always a pleasure to have great institutions of research and doing great things, the Wole Soyinka Journalism Center. So first and foremost, why did the center embark on the REMOP power sector project? I'm sure you can help us understand some more about this project.
Okay, thank you. Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism has worked in the media space since 2005. Our focus initially was to reward those who have courageously continued to investigate issues, especially as Nigeria, you know, became a democratic state, and to help the media define itself in a democracy. The REMOP program, however, started in 2017, and our purpose was the REMOP program. It is in full the regulator's monitoring program. Our purpose was to put an eye on the regulators. The hypothesis was that if we were able to put an eye on the regulators, if we're able to put pressure on the regulators, we would be able to put an eye on that sector, since the regulators determine licensing, they determine who will join, they determine the laws and rules of the space. So the REMOP program started in 2017, like I said, and we focused on two main issues: electricity and education. Our strategy was simple. We wanted to use the media, being a leader of society, being a part of society, and one who is able to influence behavior, influence ideas through education, through informing the audience, to lead the conversations. In that way, we wanted to build the capacity of the media to report the electricity sector and also education. But now for today, we're focusing on electricity. And we wanted to also use collaboration. So collaboration with other partners, civil society, other members of civil society, non-governmental organizations, technical partners, people from the private sector, bring all of this together to enrich the understanding of the media of electricity issues, in the country. And by enriching the understanding of the media, we then supported the journalists and media houses to report on electricity in a more nuanced way that would push, you know, the conversations forward. As you may be aware, electricity is one of the top goals of sustainable development, clean and affordable energy. So we really were convinced that if Nigeria solved its electricity problems, and that can be helped through enlightenment of the media because of the pivotal role media plays in society, then, you know, we can become a better country that we want to be.
Absolutely. And these are indeed goals that will generate interest, I can imagine, with journalists. You recently held a closeout meeting with the power sector stakeholders and then journalists. What were the broad findings you reached?
Well, the findings were interesting. Let me backtrack a bit by mentioning, you know, the activities that we have embarked upon in the last 5 years. And we have been able to do all of this with the support of the MacArthur Foundation that has funded the program for 5 years. So we were able to start with what we call a status report. That was our baseline. Coming fully into reporting, supporting the report of the electricity sector, it was clear to us that we needed to build our own knowledge of the sector. So we did a baseline study, which was going back in history to when, you know, the whole thing started and where we had, what investment had been made in the sector. We also went ahead to monitor how the media had been reporting electricity before now, just to understand how we would then, you know, be able to provide materials and resources in people and in other technical expertise to be able to support the media to report the sector better. So we trained reporters, we commissioned stories, and we tried to galvanize public attention through lectures and other platforms for discussion. We also mentored students of journalism, you know, the cliche of catching them young. And we also collaborated with many other, you know, partners. What we found in the reportage of, in our media monitoring, generally checking the reportage of electricity in Nigeria, is that there are very, very few journalists who have competence to report the sector. And this definitely impacts on what kind of reporting you can get from such a broad sector. So we realized, for instance, that most media houses either, you know, bunch electricity hub under energy or they bunch it up under business, in which case, you know, it's a whole beat. And perhaps in media houses where they are lucky, maybe they have four people, you know, on that beat. And all of those four people have to do all of the ramifications of business. And electricity is only a sub beat. So it becomes difficult for the person who covers that bit to do more than the regular, to do more than follow up with, you know, what press releases government puts out there and just retweet it or do anything better. So that sector is difficult to report. Of course, it is compounded by the fact that it's a very technical sector. So it's difficult to report. There are not enough manpower in the media to report it. And the issues, it is very technical. So the media is seriously challenged to be able to properly report electricity in such a way that it can bring change to society. We found out, therefore, that there were very, very few, you know, reports that were available when it comes to electricity. In fact, there were days in the print medias that we monitored, for instance, there were days where, you know, there would be nothing on electricity in a national newspaper because, you know, they are spread thin. One of the other things that we found out was that because the sector is technical, the reportage of the sector is also mostly using technical language, which then makes it difficult for people to connect. That is why when we have buzzes like around the sector is when, for instance, you know, there's scarcity of fuel and then this affects electricity, or there's been power outage in a particular area for a long time, and the people are protesting. So those human angle stories get into the news, but the technical issues, make it difficult for the human angle stories to be able to get in. One of the things that we were able to achieve was to bring media houses together to report the sector collaboratively.
Right.
So we brought together the Premium Times, the International Center for Investigative Reporting, the Cable, and Daily Trust to do joint projects reporting the sector. And we did that on the occasion of the 68th anniversary of the country.
Right.
Just trying to say that we're 60 and we're still in darkness and this is not okay. One of the other things that we also found out is that we brought stakeholders together to discuss the issues, to learn and to help journalists to learn and to use that to develop the capacity of reporters. And we found out that the feedback we got from a lot of stakeholders is that, there is not enough avenue in the industry to discuss the issues in such a way that people learn. So they mentioned that most of the time when they are discussing the issue, they are not actually discussing. The minister or somebody in power has called a meeting. The person speaks at them. Everybody has to listen. And after that, everybody goes home. So there are no learning opportunities in the sector to discuss the issue in that way that, you get to learn about the sector and you get to build it. At the end, we were able to come up with 35 stories that we supported on the sector. And 11 of these were collaborative projects and 24 of them were individual projects.
Right.
And we were able to, get reports across the country, in 18 out of 36 countries, 18 out of the 36 states in the country.
Right.
And we really believe that we moved the needle in some way, but there is so much more, to do, because Nigerians are still living in darkness. One of the things that we did was to do a photo book on the state of the sector. And we realized that, the issues are still with us. The metering issues, the estimated billing issue, the illegal self-help by customers, because, it's not just on government. It is on different parts of society. And everybody has to own their own part of that responsibility for us to have change.
Right.
We have found out that there's still ineffective handling of customer complaints. We found out that, NEC is a lot of time, NEC, and that is the Nigerian Electric Regulatory Commission.
Right.
It is still a lot of times a toothless bulldog, so to say, because the ministers come and they override the powers of NEC sometimes. We find out that there are still infrastructural bottlenecks. We find that there's so much investment, but we are still in darkness. There is a lack of accurate data. People cannot find data. I always talk about the issue of reporting the anonymous. Many government officials speak to journalists, but they say, I don't want to be on record. So where does the Freedom of Information Act come in? And how do we uphold that act when our government officials, who should proactively inform us, refuse to talk? So the journalists are struggling. These are some of the findings. Lastly, let me just mention an interesting finding, which is about the gender spread, in the coverage of the sector and in the people in the sector. So when we called the stakeholders meeting, we had to struggle to have 7 women, participate. There were 32 men. So it's a boys' club. Electricity sector is a boys' club. The men are there. The women are very, very few. And, recently there was something around energy, a conference. There were 18 speakers. All 18 were men.
Wow.
At some point, I thought somebody should realize, the similarity in the room and do something about it. Well, that's the challenge. The massive manpower challenge in the electricity sector is mostly male. And when it comes to, having female reporters, that is also hard. What we had to do was to get reporters who were not ordinarily covering electricity, train them, just because we wanted female reporters to also cover the sector. At the end of the day, out of the 52 reporters that we were able to train, only 16 were female. and 36 were men. But that was a lot considering the fact that, you know, there are very, very few, maybe like three or four, you know, very, very few female reporters who are known to cover the sector. So this gender disparity is also, you know, very evident in the sector. These are some of the things that we noticed. There are more, but I'll stop there now.
Absolutely. And we look forward to seeing the entire report because it does provide some interesting analysis and review. Thank you very much, Mutunrayo Alaka, Executive Director, CEO of the Wole Soyinka Center for Journalism. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. This is just one part of the discussion we're having today. We have coming up next, Vaiola Quagga is a Senior Research and Policy Analyst with Budget, and Ruthie Sankore is still up there. This in partnership with the Wole Soyinka Center for Journalism. So, Vaiola Quagga, I see that you're already up and ready to join us. Vaiola, if you're there, say aye.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear. And so, those of you who are watching online, you can also join the conversation too. This is being streamed live on Facebook as well as on YouTube on Nigeria Info FM. So, Vaiola, straight ahead with you, sir. Let's begin with this big discussion, which affects every single one of us. I dare say every average Nigerian knows more about power and the dynamics of power than any other country in the world. Interestingly, it's not reciprocated in the amount of electricity the average Nigerian enjoys on a daily basis. So let's begin.
Yes.
In the 2022 power sector budget proposal, it's a significant improvement on 2021 and previous years. Do you see any significant improvement? The Interesting National Assembly is going through the budget sector by sector with the leadership and the hierarchy, and we'll love to see what will happen afterwards. But what's your thinking of the budget for power for next year compared to previous years?
I mean, thank you for having me. I would say that there is a significant improvement, but you would have to count from 2019. If you were to look at, if you were to start from 2017, for example, Nigeria allocated about $533 billion to the power sector. Well, works, power, and housing, I suppose. So one could argue that there were other ministries taking a part of that huge chunk.
Mm.
But when the ministries were unbundled, if I may use that term, as of 2019, yes, there was an improvement. There was a dip in 2020 where we allocated about $133 billion, which actually was the lowest within a 3-year period. But it began to climb from 2021. It was about $354 billion. And now there's a proposal for about nearly half a trillion at $451.35 billion. So yes, I would say that there is an improvement. I would also add that rural electrification seems to be getting a sizable portion of that amount. As a matter of fact, it's taking more than 20% of the total budget at about $115 billion for the National Rural Electrification Agency.
Mm.
So we are seeing some improvements. The Transmission Company of Nigeria, in addition, is taking the second highest allocation for the entire power ministry at about $104 billion. I beg your pardon. The highest allocation is actually the Nigerian Bulk Electricity Trading PLC at $150 billion.
Mm.
Then we have the National Rural Electrification Agency and then the Transmission Company of Nigeria in that order. So I will say that, yes, there has been some improvement, but translating that to improvements in the lives of Nigerians is, I guess, another discussion.
Absolutely. I'm sure you would want to compare and contrast whether this can make any significant improvement. But in terms of budget performance, is it possible to rate the 2021 budget, power sector budget? How would you rate this in terms of...
Yeah,
Go ahead, yeah, please. Yeah. Payela, go
yes,
ahead.
I mean, you can rate performance. Usually what one does is to look at budget performance reports or budget implementation reports. Unfortunately, while there is some information available on the Open Treasury portal that the federal government put up sometime, I think late last year, I mean, it has some sizable amount of information on various MDAs in various classifications. So the power sector falls under the economic classification, and then all the MDAs from the Nigerian Electricity Liability Management Limited Company to the Nigerian Bulk Trading Firm to the power sector headquarters to the National Rural Electrification Agency, ETC, they all have their budget performance reports there. However, there is no comprehensiveness of this information. So, for example, while you will see fields for quarterly budget performance, if you actually press those links, I'm actually on the page right now, a lot of the links are dead and lead you to 404 pages. Some simply do not open. And for the ones that do open, I mean, if you're getting one quarter out of four quarters, how can you reliably measure performance? How can you reliably gauge the performance of the budget and the use of the monies? It, I mean, pardon the pun, but we are still in the dark, even as it, even as we look at the financials for the Nigerian state. Apart from physically being in the dark, you know, the lack of comprehensiveness and openness and accessibility and formatting of this financial information really makes analysis of the budgets and the performance of the power sector in particular extremely difficult.
Which makes the next question I'm going to even ask you more cumbersome, because we are supposed to know what areas of improvement we hope to see with next year's budget based on how much has been allocated. But I guess, except you've got magical powers or you're able to work with what you have, you think it's easier for you to say it's vague, or you think there's something we can see in where the monies have been put, what the government seeks to want to improve with the power sector?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, because even if you look at data from the NBS, for example, a lot of it is dated. I mean, the most recent analysis done by the NBS on the on power generation, if I recall correctly, was from 2019. And, you know, we are going to 2022. So how, if this information is not timely, then how can we really make accurate predictions about what the sector entails? I will also add that because there's no reliable information on the total number of Nigerians that require electricity, I'm just using that phrase very loosely. You know, you are put in a corner as regards supply. You know, NERC will say that they're going to provide, say, 4 million meters to Nigerians. But we know the total population of individuals that require meters, or households or buildings that require meters. If you do not have this information, and I mean, this speaks to the broader problem of accurate record keeping and citizens' information generally in Nigeria, you cannot budget. You cannot reliably even plan when you do not have this information at your fingertips. And I think that these are, these problems are not new. They did not just creep up on us, but they had been manifesting for quite some time, despite the fact that the power sector does have, you know, challenges in terms of meeting supply and generating enough electricity and transmitting it. I think the federal government does really need to buckle up in terms of finding out the accurate number of, you know, the supply gap, the Nigerians requiring these meters and meeting that supply gap with that reliable information.
Absolutely. In, by the way, in case you just joined us on Public Square 99.3 Nigeria Info, we're speaking with Vaiola Quagga, who's a senior research and policy analyst with Budget. Earlier on, we'd spoken with Motunrayo Alaka of the Wole Soyinka Journalism Center. Interestingly, this is in partnership with the Center for Journalism. That's today's episode and next two episodes. We reached out to the presidency, and in fact, I did speak with Engineer Zachary, who's the president's special advisor on power infrastructure, and was scheduled to join him, but unfortunately, he had some commitment and cannot join him, but he will join in subsequent episodes. So many of the dots we have not been able to join, which is what we do a lot in public square, they probably will be able to explain to us, but would have loved, just like Viola is pointing out, to be able to see this online and be able to make our deductions based on what they have budgeted and how it's affecting quarter by quarter, by which was the reason, Viola, why that portal was in the first instance, the open portal put up for us to assess what the government was doing. But we'll come back and talk about that some more. Meanwhile, if you've got questions for Viola, number to send the messages on WhatsApp, 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. Or if you've got some sort of general comments on what you think is going on with the power sector and the budget, we can talk. You can send us messages also to also on social media. Viola, do you think the power sector budget is currently well positioned as a stimulant to other sectors of the economy? Interestingly, we do a lot of the interplay of the sectors. Say, for example, a couple of days, I was talking with a number of colleagues about local about boosting local production. And yes, when we had done the mapping, it all came around to, even if you've got mechanized farming in the crosshairs, what's happening with the power to make sure that those who want to do the mechanized farming can have things happen? So somehow all the sectors are connected to the power sector. So what do you think, with the budget we have, you think it's enough to boost the other sectors, or you think it's still not enough?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that, for one, these are really problems of planning.
Hmm.
When you look at our development plans and the execution of those plans,
hmm,
you see very huge gaps. There's a huge disconnect with our plans and the implementation.
Hmm.
And then again, this also boils down to the problem of having accurate data, which I do not really get a sense that the federal government and, you know, previous governments as well have really been active in terms of having and using adequate data for planning.
Mm.
We talk about improving gross domestic product and improving the incomes of Nigerians, but it appears that we fail to grasp that everything is connected.
Mm.
The improvements we want to see in our revenue, revenue generation and income generation will truly have to come from concerted efforts by the public and the private sector, really, to boost energy supply. So I will say that, yes, the sector is poised to provide that critical infrastructure. And when you talk about public policy, the provision of infrastructure is a hard, is what they call hard infrastructure.
Right.
It is tangible.
Mm.
And the idea is that, you know, the federal government, because of its scale, can provide this electricity because it will be cheaper and it has a different risk profile than a private firm would have. But over the years, we've realized that the government has been notoriously inefficient providing electricity. And, you know, concerns about the climate have also crept in. Mm. So there are moves by several countries around the world to be more green.
Mm.
And I suspect that Nigeria would also want to run with that, going by the statements and commitments given by the president at the recently held, I think it's still going on.
Still going
on. 26
right,
events.
In Glasgow.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. So, I mean, yes, looking at the raw figures, you can see, like I said earlier, huge allocations to rural electrification, huge allocations to the Transmission Company of Nigeria and the Nigerian Bulk Electricity Trading PLC. So you have hundreds of billions of naira, but when you look at the performance, not even fiscal performance, when you look at the physical performance of the existence of meters and transmission lines, you do not see anything to really write home about. I mean, if you take a look at the budget, the 2021 budget, and you look at, say, the Ministry for Power Headquarters capital budget, you will find dozens of line items dedicated to provision of streetlights. And I mean that provision of streetlights. And at random, I was just kind of some calculations before the program began. And I took about maybe 8 or 9 of those line items, and they amounted to 2 billion naira for providing solar streetlights. So you can see that even from the point of budgeting, there is no transparency. There is huge, huge suspicion on the part of we in the civil society that review these budgets that the federal government is really not performing as well as it should. And these are extremely worrying line items. If you look at the issue of debt, you know, the MDAs are owing hundreds of billions of naira to these distributing companies. So how do you expect distributing companies to actually break even, you know, much less provide electricity efficiently and you know, broadly? So, you know, you look at these systemic issues and you ask yourself, as much as the budget has increased, you know, year on year from at least 2019, there is no place where the rubber meets the road in terms of actual provision. And I mean, maybe these things are a bit technical, but there is a problem within the power sector as regards the private firms' access to finance and provision of infrastructure. So there are risk profiles that companies will have to consider when they're going into the power generation space. How much finance will I need to provide a transmission line? That's if I'm into transmission. How much will I need to acquire generating capabilities? And will the governance problems of mismanagement, of corruption, not further problematize my private sector foray into the power supply market? So, you know, these are like issues that we can discuss all evening. But I will say that I'm really struggling, and I suspect a lot of Nigerians are as well, struggling to see some real commitment by the federal government. I would have loved for Mr. Ahmed Zakaria to have been on the program because I've read some of his interviews where he, you know, spoke pretty big about how the government has or intends to provide millions of meters to Nigerians. And, you know, they have commenced the first critical phase. And I would really want to take him to account and ask him that the World Bank, you know, published information on the apparent misuse of money it had given to Nigeria under the power sector reform plan. And, you know, the federal government has been flat out denying these accusations. But we, the Nigerians that are living these realities, would probably side with the World Bank and say, come on, you know, we really are not experiencing any improvements in electricity supply.
Absolutely. And we'll get Engineer Zakaria eventually. And it's a question I also would love to ask him in terms of the transparency. But what interestingly, as we speak, Viola, we've got report that the government just increased the price of those meters. And they would say, for example, that the problems facing the power sector, they just set the groundwork so that they can create an environment where private investment can come in to help deal with it, because it's never been their belief that the federal government will be able to handle all of the problems facing the country's power sector in terms of demand and providing the supply for the millions of people in the country. Will you say that what you've seen in terms of transparency, because this is also a very huge part for any investment to want to come in to work with this sort of system where we're grappling for the data like we're grappling for straws?
I don't want to sound to say a cliche, but he who fails to plan, plans to fail. And I will give some credit to the federal government for, you know, unbundling NEPA, you know, from what it was to what it is now. But the problems of transparency and accountability in financial and fiscal management will persist, even though these firms have been privatized, simply because there is no real change in terms of the institutional environment, you know, that regulates the power sector. These are the same Nigerians. We're not bringing in people, foreigners from abroad to handle our power sector. The government still owns substantial shares in some of these firms, the DISCOs, the GenCos. And even when TCN will be unbundled, because I discovered that it will be unbundled soon, the federal government will still own a lot of shares in these new firms. And with that, you know, remains the problem of that transparency. So where the government does not publish its financial reports, its budget reports, in terms of, you know, the GenCos, the DISCOs, the transmission companies, how can civil society really take the government to account? Because there is no incentive. There's no incentive for the federal government to be transparent, you know, except through continued efforts by civil society and perhaps, you know, reform-minded bureaucrats in the political circles. But really, the problems of transparency, I feel, are probably the most endemic to this system, because where Nigerians do not even know what they are dealing with, when analysts, when researchers, when civil society people, when the media is unsure of what information, you know, is available. I mean, we cannot make adequate critiques. We cannot, in good faith, make adequate critiques about the power sector.
Right. And, you know, Viola, one of the things people did think will be a thing of the past when the reforms happened in 2013 was that many of the things, which I'm going to read from someone who's put out a message on WhatsApp. Don't forget, you can join the conversation on WhatsApp, 0809-597-5805. Okwe Kende, he writes in from Ijegun, and he says, kudos to your guests. Said it all. In Ijegun, we hardly have light. With estimated billing, we, the pressure group, are going to stage a protest and demand for prepaid meter. It's ironic, right, that you think that after all these years that we should have dealt with the prepaid meters, and then estimated billing should be a thing of the past. Even when you have legislation against it, it's still very often reported. And then I guess you can react to that. And there's another one I see here from Maryland. Andose says, the 500 billion naira allocated to power in the 2022 budget is just peanuts. We will achieve close to nothing with that paltry amount. What we need is about 200 to 500 billion US dollar investment in generation, distribution, and transmission. To achieve this, the federal government needs to sell her own share in all DISCOs and GenCos to financially buoyant companies in and outside Nigeria for this heavy investment. Federal government holding on to the core of the power sector will never take us anywhere. Viola, you want to react to any, to this comment or any of them?
Yes. I mean, the gentleman from Ijegun, I really, I'm quite saddened that in 2021, we have to take to the streets to demand electricity, to demand proper supply of electricity.
Interesting. He still calls it NEPA.
I mean, it's old habits die hard. Yeah. Old habits die hard, I guess. So, I mean, I would love to see a situation where the solar, the intention of the federal government to sort of lean more towards solar power and decentralize solar power would really take flight. Because the problem with the power sector, I mean, from 1999 was over-centralization.
Right.
And I don't think that the federal government has the capacity in terms of management, in terms of incentives, to handle a power sector for a nation of over 200 million people. You know, when you look at our consumption, you know, per kilowatt, we stand around 115 kilowatts per hour. And you look at countries like Egypt that are about 1,500 kilowatts per hour. Then you go to the South Africans that are 3,000. And finally, the highest Iceland, 50,000 kilowatts, you know, per capita. That's per person.
Only
you know.
In our dreams.
You know, so I mean, that's it's really terrible. And the second point by the person that talked about the budget. Yeah. I mean, I agree totally. I agree with that suggestion that the federal government needs to divest completely, because the idea is that the incentives for governments to provide efficient and effective electricity are just not there. I was speaking with an individual a couple of weeks ago, and he said ever since his community, you know, began to generate their own electricity,
right.
He lives in Louth.
Good.
He hasn't, you know, he has gone for months without a blink from his electricity. And, you know, this is what decentralization can do. I think Nigerians are willing to pay for electricity
right.
as long as it's provided.
Right.
These huge sums that the government is spending, which frankly are very, very little,
right.
because if you look at the proposed budget, 451
right.
billion,
good.
Compare that to 16 trillion.
Right.
I mean, that is not near, I think it's about less than 5%, if I'm not mistaken, of the total budget size.
Right.
So where do we expect to be in the coming years? How do we expect to see ourselves transit to a low-income country, to a medium-income country without adequate investments and management of the power sector? It breaks my heart that Nigerians still experience the outages. And what's even worse is that if the GenCos were to produce at optimal capacity, 12,000 megawatts, the transmission capacity simply cannot even absorb that. So, you know, it's a very, very, it's a frightening thought that even if we were to produce at optimal capacity, we still could not even transmit that electricity to the DISCOs.
Absolutely. Don't forget, this is the Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism partnership with Nigeria Info's Public Square. And we're looking at power, three-part series. And we have interesting analysis and discussions. We're having Deep Vayala Quagga, who is a senior research and policy analyst with Budget. And as we bring in some more dimension to this, it just got me thinking, Vayala, which is a big discussion, a question I asked, you know, when we're trying to connect the dots, if we hope to get those impressive numbers. Interesting, Nigeria has changed the name of the ERGP to the National Development Plan. Someone joked me, it's a rolling conversation where the name keeps changing from ERGP to NIDP or NIP. It's all rolling plan. And they say, and we say that, and you talked about those numbers, 15 kilowatts per person here, and then you look at the numbers for South Africa, and it goes on. How important is it that the power per capita for each person improves so that it directly impacts on the new jobs or the output from existing businesses to grow our GDP? Is there any magic if we don't deal with this one and we can get the GDP up irrespective of the power situation?
Yes, I mean, there's no easy route to development. And it requires sustained, efficient and effective management. It requires foresight. It requires planning. It requires discipline. And the power sector, frankly, has not experienced any of this, you know, in the recent years. If we are still experiencing outages, if communities around Nigeria, I mean, there are marginal increases here and there, but I mean, they seem to be more of the exception than the rule. And we need to get to a point where that is reversed. So, I mean, I will admit that for a lot of Nigerians, power provision has improved. I will also admit that with the introduction of solar power, a lot of Nigerians have begun to have access to electricity. But I will say that if we intend to become one of the top economies, I suppose, in the next 10 years, there really has to be some sustained management by the government and the private sector within this power supply debacle. And like the previous commentator mentioned, there really does need to be more divestment to the private sector of these power generation firms. I mean, the Bureau of Public Enterprises has put out some documentation that it intends to sell a few power generating plants, and I think that's a great step. But investors are going to be weary because the Nigerian private sector space is one that is fraught with, you know, government corruption, is fraught with policy flip-flops, is fraught with so much uncertainty that private capital is very, very weary of taking large risks, you know, to provide a commodity that will take, I mean, it usually even takes time for energy firms to break even because they often struggle to make gains, you know, and this is why for many countries electricity generation is still within the hands of the government.
Absolutely.
Because the government has that scale. The government has that risk appetite, you know, to say, you know what, I can provide this commodity to the public. But I think, you know, really now Nigeria needs to turn away from government provision
right,
and look more to the private sector. And without, you know, this jump to say 700 or at least 1,000 kilowatts per person, we cannot have GDP increases. Because if you look at the countries that have their power, their kilowatt per hour at, you know, over 1,000, they are the industrialized countries.
Absolutely.
They are the high income earners.
Right.
I mean, this is information from the CIA's World Factbook as at 2020.
Right.
So, you know, these countries that are doing much better than we are producing far more, are producing in excess of what we...
Well, are you still there? Right. Absolutely. Strongly correlated with all the development indices. If you will, if you will draw a line along all these countries, Viola has mentioned, you'll see they all have the same DNA. And there's something we say, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. If it works here, you might as well just repeat it, which is what many of the Southeast Asian tigers have done. Thank you very much, Viola Quagga, Senior Research and Policy Analyst with Budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. And we'll touch base again with Viola when we get Engineer Zachary on board also too. Many of these questions you guys are asking on WhatsApp as well as on other social media platforms. And together with Viola, we'll also have a 360 on it. But thank you again very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We're going to go on a quick break. When we come back, it will be time for the news headlines. And after the news headlines, Rotimi Sankore, co-host, data and development expert, will step in and we can have some big picture discussions. Viola talked a lot about planning. And we can talk about planning and what it would require for us for today. And like sustainable development, what will require for us to make it happen in the future. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Let me tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margins. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this impeachment, if Parliament does not raise this money.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is engaging the macabre dance. Compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Aroho Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
Well, welcome back to the Public Square. It's 2 minutes past five, and I see on my traffic gizmo people beginning to snake through from the island to the mainland and the island to the mainland across the major bridges that separate both islands. And don't forget, you can always join the conversation on Public Square on our social media handles at Public Square NG, at Nigeria Info FM, at Rotimi Sankore, at Awoho Obu. You can also send us messages on WhatsApp 0809 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. This hour would open the phone lines also to for you to join the conversation. Questions, comments, inquiries, anything that has got you thinking and you want to talk about in the square, we'll let you in when you want to. So, here we continue on our special power series. This is the first of three-part series. And Rotimi Sankore joins in straight away. Data and development experts will co-host with the Public Square. We're going to 360 this straight away. Key issues we're going to be looking at with Rotimi straight away. Hello, Rotimi. Do we have Rotimi in now? Okay, we'll try and...
I'm with you.
Oh, excellent. So we have Rotimi Sankore up now. And so Rotimi, we've been having some big discussion, and I guess you've been following also to everything that's been talked about from budget to the Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism, Bayala and Motunrayo.
Yes, very much so. And I would first like to thank the Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism for a great partnership on the REMOP project. I've had some insights to the REMOP project, and I know that Motunrayo did not, perhaps being modest, did not even mention half the achievements of the center in terms of capacity building, training journalists, the numbers of stories covered, the depth of the stories, absolutely fantastic work that the center did. So thanks so much, Motunrayo, and the entire Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism team. Aho, before we get into our main talking points, there is something that our colleague from Budget mentioned, which I would like to highlight as maybe the reality in Nigeria, but not necessarily the reality globally. So he mentioned that there are plans to sell off sections of the power sector in Nigeria, sell off more sections, presumably because, you know, government things do not work. You know, many Nigerians share that perspective because government in Nigeria is largely incompetent when it comes to public services. But we need to be careful about that and use some examples to explain why that is not true. So I will use one example. So a lot of people talk about Singapore. Singapore is a city-state like Lagos. Singapore's population, roughly 6 million. Singapore has 12,000 megawatts of electricity. Nigeria, 206 million. Roughly 5,000 megawatts of electricity. So Singapore is like half the population of Lagos, but more than twice the electricity of the entire Nigeria. And Singapore has a very interesting public service structure. So they have a sovereign wealth management fund, which is the major stakeholder in a lot of the public services or even bigger services like airline. So, I mean, to put it simply, the Singaporean government, through its sovereign management fund, is the biggest shareholder in the power sector. And that power sector has given Singapore more than twice the power in Nigeria, even though Singapore's population is roughly half of that of Lagos. Singapore Airlines. Google is your friend, as I always say. Singapore Airlines is majority owned by the government sovereign wealth fund and is consistently among the top three performing airlines in the world for the last how many ever years. Having flown on Singapore Airlines before, I can testify to it personally. And we can go on like that. The key thing is, what is the structure and what is the structure, ownership, and the human capacity there? That is the key thing. In all those sectors, the sovereign management fund, supported by global HR firms, picks only the best candidates. There is no nepotism. There is no quota system. There is no man, no man. There is no long leg. There is no whoever is running any of those companies, power, airline, housing, telecom. The Singapore Telecom is like Mitel. It is one of the best performing in the world. The key point is this. The technical people, the managers, and all those people are only appointed from the best in Singapore and globally. In Singapore, you can't become a teacher unless you top your class. Unless you top your class. And on top of that, you go for teacher training. The fact that you got first class in nuclear engineering or physics doesn't automatically mean you become a teacher, but that's where they pick from. You still go for teacher training to make sure you know how to impart knowledge. Look, our former colonial master in the UK, the governor of the Bank of England, two terms, is Canadian. Because when they said apply for the job, the interview panel chose the best person. Now, I'm sure that in Nigeria, many people will argue that you can get a better person than the last few ones we have had. From even within Nigeria, and so forth like that. So it's really important. We shouldn't get stuck with this idea that because it is government-owned, it must fail. Singapore and a range of other countries demonstrate to us that the structure and the capacity and the methodology used to select the top management and technical lead is a key factor. So having said that...
Right. So so we can now get into other key issues, Rotimi.
Yes.
Budget tied to whether we understand the scale of the problem is the first part we're going to deal with here. Does it look like the government understands, recognizes the scale of the problem? Someone sent a message in already saying that it was a paltry sum. We should be heading for about $2.55 billion. I think someone, it was Andose from Maryland, who sent in that message. So what do you say, Rotimi? Whether the government recognizes the scale of the problem based on the budget, which is put in for power for 2022?
No. I mean, the government does not recognize the scale of the problem at all. So let us restate what the scale of the problem is. We've talked about it on different programs. The global standard for sustainable development is 1,000 megawatts per 1 million people. By that, Nigeria should be at least 200,000 megawatts.
Right.
Nigeria's maximum transmission capacity is just over 5,000 megawatts. The overall capacity is about 13,000 megawatts. That remaining 6,000 cannot be moved because any attempt to move it crashes the entire transmission sector. So we have 6,000 megawatts capacity. And we have 13,000. We have roughly 13,000 megawatt capacity. And the highest we have ever been able to go is about 5,200. So the remaining cannot be pushed out. Let us even say it is 7,000. It can't be, because the transmission is really crap. The whole system will collapse. So on those days when the entire grid collapses and we are down to zero, and they tell us that the whole entire national grid has collapsed, it is because they try to push over 5,200. That's mostly the major reason. So it is self-evident that the scale of the problem is not recognized. And when we go through the other talking points, we'll explain why. Because the government does not seem to realize that bridging that deficit will facilitate other sectors of the economy and then solve other problems, mainly unemployment. This idea of trying to create artificially 774,000 jobs in local governments that nobody knows what they are going to be doing. Are they gatesmen? Are they sweeping? Are they just standing around? And those jobs are going to get what? Minimum wage, 30,000 naira, maybe less.
Ironically,
those are not jobs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ironically, they haven't even been paid even up till now. They're still battling with the bureaucracy.
Well, they've been standing up with their own money and they've not been paid. And those are the special jobs that the labor sector... I mean, let's not even talk about Minister Ngige today. So, does the government recognize the scale of the problem? No.
All right. Now that we've dealt with that one, the one we haven't dealt with, and which was also mentioned by Vaklaya, is the problem with the gaps. There are gaps which are obvious, like people will say, even to the blind can see. Generation, transmission, distribution, Rotimi.
Well, to summarize it, we started talking about it already. Nigeria should be generating about 200,000 megawatts.
Right.
Maximum generation is 5,200 megawatts, thereabouts. Obviously, Nigerians should be transmitting about 200,000 megawatts, which is what is needed. The maximum transition, the maximum transmission, record transmission, is just over 5,000 megawatts. Now, you can't even generate up to your 13,000 built-in capacity because you can't transmit it. So, obviously, big gap. And as for distribution, our colleague from Budget was trying to talk about something somebody WhatsApped you regarding how many people are connected. Now, the data from the government, something called the Nigeria Electricity System Operator, NESO, if you have ever heard of that one before, their data claims that in total, that about 97 million people are connected to that 5,000 megawatts maximum. So that leaves over 100 million not connected. So the miserable 5,000 megawatts is connected to about 97 million people. And what our colleague from Budget was talking about in terms of per capita consumption of power.
Right.
Most of those 97 million, they are really reduced to fan and bulb and maybe some TV. The reason the more industrialized countries in per capita terms are utilizing daily more than 2,000 times what Nigeria, average Nigerian is, don't forget, apart from light, fan, or, well, you know, there is washing machine, there is dishwasher, You know, there is what we call Hoover, which is a brand name,
right?
But you know, is the thing used to clean the floor.
Mm-hmm. They got a heating system.
And so there is the heating. There, you know, there are all kinds of things that people are connected to in their homes. Computers. You know, everybody has a freezer. Everybody has a freezer that is always connected. Everybody has a refrigerator connected. Unless you are homeless. But every building has a refrigerator. Every building has a freezer. And so on and so forth like that. Washing machine. People don't wash hand with cloths there. I mean, don't wash cloths with hand and so forth like that. So even this, you know, distribution. Now, this distribution, they are saying about 97 million people.
Right.
When you know, the real gap that the colleagues at budget were identifying, which the government does not even know, is how many meters specifically, you and I were talking about this earlier.
Right.
How many meters specifically? We have problems even getting that data from the regulator and all the stakeholders.
Yes.
Sometimes they say it's 9 million meters. Sometimes some people say it's 12 million, but only 9 million working.
Yeah.
I've had 12.5 million before. So let us take the maximum that there are 12.5 million meters.
Right.
You know, connecting 97 million people. So that essentially is the gap. You know? And what that means, I mean, if I want to look at some of the news items yesterday and today. So the Minister of Planning, Zainab Ahmed, she says that they are about to remove the fuel subsidy. And that when they do it, what they are going to use to support Nigerians will be transport palliative. Okay. This is the Minister of Planning.
Right.
So from this statement that she made in the public, I watched the statement, the Minister of Planning does not realize that that electricity gap is being made up with generators.
Good.
Millions of generators. There are more generators in Nigeria than there are vehicles.
Very true.
So if the fuel subsidy is removed, and that's a different debate entirely, and they want to give Nigerians money, how they are going to do it, I don't know. Give Nigerians transport subsidy, I don't know how that is going to be done. That's another program. What of the fuel for the generator subsidy? Because even for those that are connected, many people don't have power for more than 2 or 3 hours a day. If you are in one of those high value areas, maybe you get 8 hours and you are paying through your nose.
Right. Exactly.
When the fuel cost doubles for your generator,
yes,
will you get a subsidy?
And we know how the production setup works. They have to power 24 hours, not because they don't want to do it, but they know that any downtime destroys their businesses. So they just be on 24-hour generator rather than depend.
I know factory owners that have said that NEPA is their backup. The reason is this: if you start your manufacturing belt with NEPA and the power goes off, you have to restart the whole thing again.
And that's the end of that batch.
That's the end of that batch. You start again because, you know, you are making it, you are packaging it, you are mixing it, it's supposed to be seamless to the end. If the power goes off, bam, that's it. Whatever is on that belt then is gone. So people can't risk it. So when they really want to start work, they start with diesel gen. So when the subsidy on diesel and petrol is removed, who is going to subsidize those people? It means that the Minister of Planning is not paying attention to the big picture. And I really fear for the Nigerian economy. When this subsidy goes and the price of everything goes straight through the roof, not the least, because almost everything is connected to transport, but The bigger picture is that everything is connected to electricity. So you just think of it. Every sector, oil sector, banking sector, telco sector, everything, they are going to pay double for the generators that they use, especially if you are using petrol. And that is going to be passed on to the customer. So really, the power sector is what they should be focusing on. This should be the biggest priority. Now, the president said yesterday that they have invested tremendously in infrastructure. Now, compared to where Nigeria is, and from his point of view, it's probably true. So I know, for instance, that the government is planning that in a few years that the megawatts will increase to, say, about 24, 25,000 megawatts.
Right.
Which is part of the Siemens deal.
Yes. All right, that's me. We will.
But let me just say quickly, in that time, the population would have also grown proportionately. So that would be barely 10% of the government's power need, of Nigeria's power needs.
Exactly. Exactly. Projection must be put together with the planning. We're going to go on a quick break, and we come back, we can talk some more on some of the issues we've left untouched. 99.3 Nigeria Info Public Square. Let's talk.
Ladies and gentlemen,
all right, 99.3 Nigeria Info. We're 24 minutes to 6. I'm Aogo Obo together with Rotimi Sankore in the public square. We are looking at power, the first of a three-part series. And from now till the top of the hour, we will deal with this matter, at least the first part, and then we'll save the rest for next week and the week after. So Rotimi, we have the audience yearning to join the conversation, but we still have unfinished business on what you think should be done in fixing the major gaps before we go to the phone lines. Rotimi.
Yes, please. Two important points to make. One is the power sector gaps cannot be plugged without one, Nigeria improving its ability and capacity to manufacture the components needed. So unless we can manufacture and fabricate key components like substations, transformers, a lot of the high tension equipment, and so forth, then we are not going to be able to make any sustainable progress. Because the countries that are able to meet and surpass their power needs all manufacture and fabricate those things in their countries. So that is the most important thing that we need to deal with. That also includes not just the capacity to manufacture and fabricate in terms of human capacity, that is to train the engineers and the technicians that we manufacture, fabricate, and maintain, but to set up the entire system. Remember when over 100 NEPA containers were found in the ports after being missing for more than 1 year? How can a country with 5,000 megawatts when it needs 200,000 megawatts? You know, when it needs 200,000 megawatts, roughly 95% deficit.
Right.
How can such a country have 100 or more containers of parts go missing in the port for more than 1 year? That small port in Lagos.
Yeah.
The containers were there and nobody could find them. And when they found them, who got to take them, to deploy them? So what does this tell us? It tells us that the capacity of the GenCos, the DISCOs, the TCN to actually set up this infrastructure is poor. So if people from Jupiter arrive tomorrow morning with every single thing we need for the 200,000 megawatts, it is going to sit in the ports there for 50 years. It won't move.
because there has been no plan, no coordination between the Minister of Planning, the Minister of Science and Technology, the Minister of Education, the Minister of Employment, all the key sectors that we need to look at and say, okay, if a country of this size needs 2 million engineers and technicians and has about 150,000, how do we bridge the gap? How do we bridge the gap? So unless that is done, we know we are not going to get anywhere. I mean, this has to start from primary school in terms of the quality of education in primary and secondary school.
Right.
What the universities need to train in terms of practicals. So the NUC, the NUT, all these people need to be involved for long-term planning. We call it pipeline planning. You see where you want to be in 20 years' time, and you start today, and you bring in all the sectors, planning, science and technology, education, and so forth, at federal and state level. So you set the big targets, and everybody knows what they are contributing.
Absolutely. Ruthman, let's open the phone lines straight away. Absolutely.
Including the hardware. So unless we do that, before we go to the phone line, unless we did that, all the problems in the other areas, because the only way to solve unemployment is industrialization. And you can't industrialize without power. You can't feed the country without power. You can't stop this nonsense where we have mango season, orange season, because we can't refrigerate what we grow. But just go abroad. Countries that don't grow any of those things, they have orange, mango, cashew in supermarkets.
Absolutely.
24/7, 365.
Yeah. So Ruth, let's open the phone line. Then we can do the reactions once we've gotten all the calls coming in. 0700-993-993-993. Again, 0700-993-993-993. And then on WhatsApp, 0809-597-5805. Obetta Joseph says, I don't really know how we think in this part of the world. Imagine what Trujillo says about Singapore. But here, our Minister of Interior told us during screening that he doesn't know anything about portfolio given to him. They went ahead and they confirmed him. Now, look at how many prisoners are on the run. and I didn't see that way until now. Thank you, Joseph. Or better. Ogolotino from Ikorodu says, my name is Samuel. Okay. You said it all. Do you know in the community we have over 5 communities that don't have light for over a year now, and they're all running on generator, I can imagine. Christopher from Ikoyi, great to have you join us this evening, Christopher.
Chief Obo.
Chief Christopher, good evening.
Chaku Marco.
Marco Shi, please go ahead.
Yala. Sarutimi, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Thank you. My local government is called Ndokwa East. We have the biggest gas plant in West Africa. Sarutimi, we don't have light in that village, that local government. As I'm speaking with you. During Joseph Wyatt, you remember Joseph Wyatt?
Yeah, former president of the Senate.
He visited that place 3 times. Baba Obasanjo visited that place 3 times up till today as I'm speaking with you. We don't have light. But, Chief Obo, the people that this president appoints, like the man in charge of power, all this explanation Sarutini is giving, you want to, this man don't know about it. He don't have idea what to do.
All right. When they come in next week, Christopher, we'll ask them whether they don't know. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Christopher.
Well, Aho is worth mentioning that the new power minister, when there was the cabinet shuffle, remember the statement he made 2 days after he was appointed?
Oh, yes, I remember.
That he wants to assure everybody that he's not a magician.
Yeah, I remember very well. Oh, dear. Pascal. Pascal is calling us from Surulere. Hello, Pascal. Great to have you join us.
Yeah, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Pascal. Please go ahead.
My comment comes from what Okoro Tobi was saying. What about our education system, let's say the way we don't have practical instruments again. Because when I was growing up, we used to have those like a GTC, all those technical colleges. But I don't know what happened again.
Big question. They're all gone, most of them. But thank you very much, Pascal. Rhetorical question. Keep those calls coming. Female callers, 01465-7190. Again, 01465-7190. Interesting analysis done by the Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism that shows us also a gender gap in understanding the electricity problem. Manpower, but no women wrote to me in the system. If you get some more messages on WhatsApp, this is from Chooks in Ikeja. He says, it's a rather long one. He says that the only thing that can save Nigeria is a weak center, whereby the regions will begin to compete with each other and begin before 10 years. Most of the things will begin to happen positively because each region will want to field their first 11. All right, he's going political in resolving this one. Alex.
He actually has a point there, which is that Nigeria is one of the few federal countries in which the component parts do not have the ability to generate and distribute their own power.
Absolutely.
So if you go to Australia, US, Germany,
right,
and so forth like that, Brazil, you know, the states can generate and distribute their own power. It's over centralized.
It's unfortunate our leaders do not have or do not seem to understand the impact of power to economic and national development. He says, wrote to me, how do we get out of this mess? I don't have your name, sir, but Obi from Tel Aviv in Israel. That's the first time I'm seeing a comment coming on WhatsApp from Israel. He says, the state of Israel has rocky soil and it rains barely 3 to 4 months in a year here, but they never run out of fruits and vegetables all year. And in fact, they export so many of the agricultural produce to Europe. I can testify to having been to Israel too.
The mangoes and oranges are almost as big as a human head.
Yeah, and that's a desert country. Alex from Ikeja, great to have you join us. Quickly go and make your comments, Alex.
Yeah, hi everyone, Mr. Rotimi. You see, I listened to the minister's presentation yesterday, and one of the things I observed is that there doesn't seem to be a vision. It only takes for that minister to be replaced, or us having a general election for everything that she said to be derailed all over again. You understand? There is no vision. There is nothing that all of the ministers are hanging on to as a basis for the direction in which we want to go. You see, I sympathize with Mr. Rotimi when he makes it, because I feel his pain. There is nothing that we are all being driven by, and that is the bane of our problem. You know, we're an economy that seems to be driven by just contracts and contractors. If you have your man in the office, you get your contract, you submit the cables, you submit the this, you submit the that. But what is the vision driving all of these things? She was just referring to just basically like somebody who is here to serve one term or maybe a year and two, and then she leaves. She made no reference to a model, any model that has been tested in any other country before that succeeded. You know, nothing substantial, nothing inspiring.
Thank you very much, Alex. And I'm sure we'll pay some attention to the National Development Plan, and maybe we'll do some real analysis on exactly what sort of difference this can make, 5-year plan to the so many socioeconomic problems we face. Akin, we are last caller on Public Square. He's calling in from Ogba. Hello, Akin.
Yes.
All right. Can you move away from the device you're listening to so we don't get the feedback?
Okay. Is it okay now?
Better. Please go ahead quickly.
Okay. Ogaro TV. I sympathize with you again, because all these ideas you are talking about now. Yes, so because I can detest the frustration in your submissions. All these things you are saying now, these people there's a huge disconnect from what you are saying. All they are interested in political parties affiliations. Share contract, just like the other woman said, share contract, you know, and all that. They don't have if any idea of what it takes to develop a nation, honestly.
All right,
Akin. 20-something years, 20 years, okay, what can we show for it? Nothing.
All right, Akin, thank you very much. And thank you very much, all of you who've called in. Remember, you can also listen to this podcast. It means you missed out or you want to listen to everything again. You go on Nigeria Info FM. The Public Square podcast is available for you to listen once you go to the drop-down list. Rotimi, we have just a minute to clear out of here.
Well, let me just end by giving one practical example of what we are suffering.
Hmm.
So it is said that the global shoe industry is worth about $250 to $260 billion.
Mm.
And that Nigeria, mainly through the efforts of Ariaria Market, where they are making shoe mainly with hand, is contributing about $96 billion to it. With hand, no power. The industrial section of Ariaria Market, they are working with generators and using kerosene-powered heating stove. This is one of the reports from the Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism published in Daily Trust.
Kerosene power stove.
Kerosene-powered heating stove to work on the glue and the leather, which is causing health problems, environmental pollution. If they had grid power there, Nigeria's contribution to the shoe and bag industry globally will double or triple from that reported $96 billion. Can you imagine the amount of wealth and jobs that would be generated? One disco, the Enugu disco, is supplying all the five southeastern states. You can see how proper planning and industrialization can solve what is described as political problem, not to mention forex inflow.
Rotimi, we have to go now.
Yes.
But this
anyway,
will
join us next week when we go in detail on the GenCo, TCN, and so forth like that. I mean, this idea that the NBET is selling power to Niger Republic and Benin,
right,
and they claim they are selling
surplus power. We have
power.
To go. We have to go now, yeah. Rotimi.
Okay.
We have to go.
Okay.
All right.
Next
thank
week,
you.
4 p.m.
Great. Up next, the news, and after the news, we have music and moments on 99.3 Nigeria Info.